This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour two of the Lombardi Line coming at you from coast to coast. Michael Lombardi out there in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. A great hour on tap coming up in about 30 minutes. Great friend of the show, Harry Gagnon, will join us, get some of his thoughts and plays on the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Final, which is upon us. It's Why Not Wednesday, so we have some fun long shot props we're going to dive into at the end of the hour. But Michael, I want to start with a topic that has been top of mind for you over the last couple days, the Miami Dolphins. You wrote a full article about them this morning. What inspired the article, and what's the road that we're going down here with Miami?
Well, what inspired it was when I saw Tua. Like, I mean, Tua played last year. He played in all 18 games, and you know, at the end of the year, they did not play well. 2 years. I mean, they are, since week 13 of the season, the Miami Dolphins under Mike McDaniel's direction is 4-20. Since week 13 in both years. And so they faded, and they faded because they got a lot of guys hurt on defense. Bradley Chubb, Phillips, all their, I mean, they were a shell of themselves when they played Kansas City. But when you look at the end of the year, their offense wasn't very good. And then I saw the picture of Tua, and I just thought, you know, why would a guy who stayed healthy for the first time in his career change what he was doing? Like, what is he up to? And I've heard a lot of different reasons. I can't prove any of them. I didn't include any of them in the article, you know, off the field, what's going, none of that, right? So, but there's something there. And then when you peel back the layer about Miami and you say, okay, where can they duplicate the success that they had last year? Are they going to be able to dominate teams like they did last year? And you start looking at it, knowing they're going to pay Tua in the mid-50s per year, you realize that this team may be having the arrow pointed down. And I wanted to really get into why Vic Fangio left, because I think there's a couple things here that are going on, right? I think when you're the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, it's hard. It's a challenging job because Miami is a fun place for a young guy with a lot of money to live. Lots to do. And if you read the quotes by the players about Vic leaving, and if you read what I included in the article, what Ron Jaworski said, who's very close friends with Vic, is it was hard to have accountability under the Mike McDaniel scheme. Mike McDaniels is not really the head coach. He's the offensive coordinator who's in charge of the coaches. But he has no real involvement in special teams or the kicking game or actually defense. None, actually. This will be his third defensive coordinator in 3 years. Yep. So things are changing. So I wanted to kind of peel back that. And the Tua picture really sparked, as I said in the article, 1,000 words.
So let's go deeper in on Tua here real quickly, because for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, he showed up to a media event recently at minicamp yesterday as well, talking to reporters, and he is noticeably, like, significantly thinner than we saw him last year. He was listed as 6'1", 227. He looks sub 200, and it's not something that we're just noticing. His teammates are calling it out as well. Here's Tyreek Hill on Tua's new look.
Well, I ain't gonna lie, when I see Tua at the Pro Bowl, I was kind of scared. Dude was he was fat, he was chubby. I was like, hold on now. Bruh, hold on, bruh. Like, Ryan Clark said you were kind of thick. Now, he wasn't lying, but seeing him now and where he's come from and how skinny he has gotten, what's that stuff with everybody taking? Ozempic? He had to be taking that, bruh.
And Jalen Waddle today said, I miss chubby Tua. I didn't like it when I seen it. I told him, I'm not bleeping with it. Eat some more or something. So I think what happened was it got maybe a little too out of hand, right? Like last year, he really focused on the durability, being bigger, being stockier, being able to take some of those hits that he was taking because he had so many injury issues and concussions in the past. I think now he's turned the dial a little bit too far. And I understand wanting to be more agile and being able to be quicker and evade some of those tackles. But I think that it's gone too far. It's a little bit much. Whereas Lamar Jackson losing weight, you're like, man, this guy's already so fast. And he's shown that he can hold up a lot better now and he can avoid those hits. I'm not sure it's the same situation for Tua losing this weight.
No, and we know this. Last year, everybody thought one more concussion, Tua was going to retire.
Correct.
I didn't include it in the article, but there was a whole offseason where if Tua got hit early in the year, he was contemplating retirement as it was. Now, we haven't heard that retirement talk. Of course, $50 million per year can keep you away from talking about retirement. There's no question. But I think the Tua picture started me down a road of investigating this team. And the fact that McDaniels is 4-10 since week 13, 2 years in a row, the fact that the players embraced and celebrated Vic Fangio's departure, the fact that Anthony Weaver comes in with no real experience coaching the back end. They hired Joe Barry to help that. They named him run game coordinator, interesting. But if you look at what Anthony Weaver did in his first year as defensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, now they weren't very good. They were 30th in yards, 27th in points, 32nd in creating interceptions. Not good at all. The work's going to be challenging. You know, you can laugh about Vic being old school. You can laugh about Vic working him too hard. But Vic understands what it takes to be a good defense. Mm. And you can make fun of him all you want, but he's more right than the players are going to be right. And I just think to me that this is a situation why they're 4-10 is because their head coach is kind of going to be what we call a player's coach. Let's let them do what they need to do. We'll outscore people. And then let's go back and look at it, right? So let's visit week 13 of this year, and you go back and see where they have. They start with the Packers. Cold weather game, Green Bay, November. Come home and play the Jets. All right, they go to Houston. The dome will be closed. No big deal. Play San Francisco at home. They end up with Cleveland, cold. I can promise you that. The Jets, cold. I can promise you that. And has anybody looked at Tua's numbers when it's 40 degrees or below? He's not good. He's not good. Like, they know it in Miami, he's not good. When this schedule came out, everybody in Miami, they'll never admit this, was worried because if they're in a race to go to Cleveland and to go to the Jets and they need both those wins, you could forget about it.
Yeah, lost four of their last six games down the stretch last year. And again, these are against good teams, too, that final however handful of weeks from week 13 on. And I've said this stat on the show before. I'm probably going to say it a number of other times before we get into the season. Against good teams, so we're talking teams 500 win percentage or better, I think that's fair to say, Tua had 22 touchdowns, win percentage or worse, excuse me, against bad teams. Tua had 22 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. The team as a whole averaged 35.5 points per game. Against teams that are over 500 win percentage, they were 1-6 in those games. Tua had 8 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and the offense averaged just 16 points per game. So not only do you have, as you're talking about, cold weather teams, but good opponents that you're going to have down the stretch as well. That stretch is why they missed out on winning the division last year. I mean, the Packers, the Jets twice, the 49ers, the Texans, who we anticipate being really good, the Browns, who, yes, are a question mark, but on the road in prime time on Sunday Night Football in a tough place. Like, these are a lot of things that are important to keep in mind. So Miami's win total, 9.5. It is juiced to the over. So people are believing and buying in on this team that won 11 games last season. But just keep that in mind. Another thing I want to touch on here real quickly, Michael, because the Browns, who I just referenced, they evidently have given extensions to their head coach, Kevin Stefanski, and general manager, Andrew Berry. I don't know the terms or the length or the extent of it, but I find that a little bit interesting, given that Andrew Berry was there and responsible for the Deshaun Watson deal that could go down as one of the worst ever. So just give me your initial thoughts on this.
Well, I think the Haslam family is intimately involved, and so is Paul D. Podesto. And I don't think that Andrew Berry drove that Deshaun Watson train all by himself. I think he was maybe the conductor, but he might have been a subconductor. I think there was more people on that than meets the eye. Paul D. Podesto, Jimmy Haslam, D. Haslam, you know, all the other people involved in the family. And I think, look, Kevin Stefanski's won coach of the year 2 of the 3 years he's been a head coach in Cleveland. I don't know what they were. He's done a good job. They stripped him of his offensive play calling because they wanted to bring in a new play caller. They wanted him to go become a head coach. So I think what's happened is the Haslam family's very comfortable with the arrangement they have because they're involved. Mm. You know, they're involved in everything, and they want somebody to run their team. Dee Podesto runs the football with Barry, and Stefanski runs the team, and they can still be involved without really making them aware that they're involved. So it's the perfect setup, and when you have the perfect setup, usually extensions happen.
obviously won 11 games last year and went to the postseason where they lost to Houston in that first game. They've used five different quarterbacks throughout the course of the season. But I just keep coming back to two things about the Browns last year that throw me for a loop is the way their defense played at home versus the road and how dramatic of a difference that genuinely was. And the fact that they won all these games despite Deshaun Watson, like they actually were winning more games with him not on the field than with him on it, which is something that would concern me. Like, what version of Deshaun Watson are we going to be? Because if you're doing this, you're saying that, hey, Deshaun Watson, this is working out. This is a good thing.
And you owe him $120 million more guaranteed money, Stormy. I mean, you're not getting away from him. You're not getting away from him. This isn't like, okay, this is our last year. You owe him the money. It isn't the Russell Wilson. We don't want to keep paying the money. This is you're paying the money.
No doubt about it. Okay, I didn't leave us enough time for what's on Michael's mind. So if it's okay with you, can we push that after the break? Because I want to get your full thoughts on it.
Sure, that's no problem. Whatever we need to do, you know that. I mean, I think the other thing I want to go back to Miami for a quick second. I think really when you look at the good coordinators, I mean, last year against Philadelphia, I mean, this was blew me away. They had 12 first downs against Philly. Right, they couldn't block Philly. They gained no yards. They had 10 penalties in the game, and they gained 244 yards. Like, at some point, when are we going to talk about the non-physicality of the Miami Dolphins offense?
I have a lot of questions about Miami, but quite frankly, I have a lot of questions about everybody in the AFC East. I feel like Buffalo. Yeah. What are we going to see from that team? What are we going to see from the Jets? What are we going to see from Miami? I don't know. We got to hit the break.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Now and save big for a limited time here at VSiN. You can get our annual subscription for an unbeatable price, usually $240. You can now subscribe for just $199. And when you use our promo code Lombardi, we're throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day with VSiN Pro. You'll gain instant access to our daily best bets from all of our show hosts and guests, real-time betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Don't miss out, though. This offer will end soon. VSiN.com/subscribe. Use that promo code Lombardi to claim your discount and bonus month.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi. No way or no doubt.
This is one of my favorite segments that we do each and every week, so let's get into it. And believe it or not, Michael, we're going to start with hockey, but with a little bit of NFL flair here, because the Florida Panthers played in the Stanley Cup final a year ago. They lost in 5 games to the Vegas Golden Knights, and they are back with a vengeance. Oilers head coach Chris Knobloch was asked about the experience that the Florida Panthers have. Take a listen.
Yeah, experience is good. I don't know. I don't know how much experience is, you know, beneficial. You can ask the Buffalo Bills how important Super Bowl experience is. But I think the biggest thing is just having confidence to play. And, you know, when our guys are playing their best, they should have a lot of confidence.
The Buffalo Bills catching strays, Michael. No way or no doubt, though. Championship experience is overrated in professional sports. What do you think?
I think it is a little bit overrated. I mean, look, these kids, and certainly in hockey at a very young age, handle the pressure. They're in a lot of pressure situations. And it's the job of the coach to remove that pressure. It's the job of the coach to basically do what they did in the movie Hoosiers and measure the court and make sure everybody knows it's 10 feet high and the court's this wide and it's this long. And really, it's about the moment. It's staying in the moment. The biggest thing about championship games is your team gets ahead of itself. We want to win. All everybody talks about is winning. When you and I both know it's not who's going to win, it's how we play. When you watch the Bills play the Chiefs, you get the feeling the Bills are going to win the game all throughout the game, and yet they don't. So I think that's the job of the coach is to keep the players in the moment. And that's the hardest challenge he has or she has, because They just want to get – they want to win. They want to win the first quarter. They want the game to be over. They want it to be the path of least – it's not. It's hard. That's why we're here. It's challenging. There's going to be ups. There's going to be downs. It's going to be really difficult. They're going to score. They're good. We're going to score. We're good. It's about who has the resiliency, and I think he's right. Don't overrate it. Just stay in the moment.
And I think what's even more important for the Florida Panthers than experience is just the fact that they're healthy. Last year in the Stanley Cup final, they could hardly ice a team, and now they've got everybody back better than ever. Also, Michael, because you'd know better than I just think about that stretch for Buffalo where you get to the hardest game to get to and you lose in a heartbreaker. You claw all the way back the next year and you get torched all the way back one more time. You fall again one more time. Oh, so it just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay, well, stick with the theme of the NFL, though, because we have seen so many players as mandatory minicamps get underway not showing up. They're taking the fines now. And a lot of people like myself are wondering, is this a good tactic or not? No way or no doubt, minicamp and training camp holdouts are an effective negotiating tactic for players.
No way squared. It's the dumbest thing of all. It's so stupid. You're just giving away money. You're trying to become something bigger than you're not. Look, let's just analyze what holdouts do. If I withhold my services and you don't have my services, you lose money, or you'll lose a game, or the trash won't get picked up, or the grass doesn't get cut. You know, there's cause and effect. There's no effect here. It's just all cause. You're holding out with no effect on the team. And yet the only effect is on you because you're giving away $100,000. Mm-hmm. How is that smart? It's like when I said, and of course, everybody on the Worldwide Leader defended it, when Le'Veon Bell gave away a whole year of salary. Oh, it was a smart thing to do. He'll make it up. Of course, he never made it up. He even admitted it was a dumb thing. This is a dumb thing. Trust me, when these kids are, when CeeDee Lamb's 60, I'll be long gone. But he's going to wish he had that $100K back. Look, I know one thing about players. They value the per diem as much as they value the signing bonus. Per diem might be $100 a day. The signing bonus might be $10 million. It's the same. And for them to just give away money with no effect, it's the dumbest thing in the world.
Oh, you know they love getting that little plastic baggie on the charter plane with their cash in it, of course. And as somebody who, by the way, made $23,000 for my first job out of college, when you can tell when you get to make these big contracts that you just forget about the value of a dollar completely. Because $100,000 is a lot of money, ladies and gentlemen. Now, one player that didn't show up to camp is CeeDee Lamb. Micah Parsons did. Dak Prescott there as well. But the trio of top players for the Dallas Cowboys eligible for new contracts here. No way or no doubt, Dak Prescott should be the lowest priority signing of these trio of pending contracts.
No doubt. I agree with that. Look, Dak's making good money. Dak's contract shouldn't be that hard to do, but you got to get these other two guys to be on the roster and to be effective. I think Dak should be. He should wait in line. He's already had a taste at the Apple. These other guys are young. I don't think the CeeDee Lamb's contract's hard to do. Take Jefferson's deal. You know, you maybe you add $135 million over four as opposed to $140 million, and you say, okay, here you go. I'll give you $135 million plus the $17 million you're owed. I'll give you $100 million in guaranteed money. You're going to earn it anyway. Off we go. It's not that hard. It should not be that hard of a contract to do. The Dak one becomes a little bit more complicated because you need to figure out how to spread the money. You need to look at your team and how the cap numbers are going to affect your team going up. See, I think to me, what you don't want to do is do Dak and then try to fit everybody else in around Dak. What you want to do is set your team up, get everybody's contract done. Okay, now Dak comes in. We need low cap numbers in years 1, 2. We need it this in 3. We think the cap. And so it's got to be strategic around that. And then you work the contract in that form.
Okay, while on quarterback contracts, how about this one? No way or no doubt, Tua Tagovailoa, Trevor Lawrence, and Jordan Love will all have new deals before training camp.
I think there's no doubt they will. And it makes sense, too. Because the one thing that training camp signals is there will be contact. And the potential for injury is always one of the great negotiating tools you have. Right now, nobody thinks they're going to get hurt. Look, T. Higgins isn't even signing his contract, and it's fully guaranteed. He's got $22 million out there on the street. All he's got to do is walk and pick it up, and it puts it in his pocket. But he didn't sign it. I mean, if he gets, God forbid, if something happens to him, he loses out on that money. It's not fair. And so sometimes, you know, when you have a contract, you pick up the money. But when you get into football and you start having contact and there's actually hitting going on and it's not a 7-on-7 drill where everybody's great and, you know, and this guy's completing passes and the ball never touched the ground, you know, then for me, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, the contracts get done. Remember this. I believe this fear does the work of reason. Fear of getting injured, fear of not having the money there, fear of waiting does the work of reason.
Well, one guy who has already secured the bag, Justin Jefferson, he's on site and he was asked about some of the quarterback changes with Kirk Cousins on his way out. You get J.J. McCarthy in the draft and bring in Sam Darnold. He said all the quarterback changes that happened didn't really affect me that much. I have talked to J.J. as soon as he got drafted. I told him confidence is key and added he'll definitely be that main person J.J. can lean on and help throughout the way. But I'm curious your thoughts on Justin Jefferson's production now with this new situation. No way or no doubt his production will take a step back with McCarthy and Darnold at quarterback.
Well, there's no doubt it will because, I mean, look, we know McCarthy's not going to be as good as Kirk Cousins. But, you know, we saw last year that whether it's Joshua Dobbs, Nick Mullins, you know, they were able to get the ball to him. And I think Kevin O'Connell will do a good job of getting him the football. But look, the reality of it is quarterbacks are going to change. They're going to go through some of this, and it happens all the time. And you just have to be adaptive to it. And I think Jefferson's right. You know. Look, I give Jefferson credit. He got in touch with J.J. McCarthy as soon as they drafted him. Meanwhile, Robert Saleh, he couldn't get in touch with Hassan Reddick as soon as they made the trade. How is this possible? How is this? Maybe Jefferson should be the head coach of the Jets. At least he had enough common sense to get in touch with his quarterback. Meanwhile, Saleh, I don't have time to talk to Hassan Reddick, even though we traded a third-round pick for. I don't want to talk to him. What would I talk to him for? Well, give me a break.
Oh, it's not unusual. When reporters ask him, oh, no, it's not unusual. Totally normal. Totally normal, Robert Saleh. Yeah, okay. Speaking of Justin Jefferson, he is getting 19.3% of our vote right now in who's the most valuable non-quarterback in the NFL. The vote is going to close soon. Make sure you get in there. Head to at M. Lombardi NFL on X. Who do you think is the most valuable non-quarterback? We'll read some comments. We'll give an update on the list.
NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. If you like watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all of our great betting tools and content at VSiN.com. Best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips and trends, and right now on the homepage, in-depth betting previews for both the NBA and Stanley Cup Finals. Whether you're looking for series plays, props, or game-by-game breakdowns, we've got you covered. Head to VSiN.com today. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome in on a week where we're having all the wide receiver talk. Our wide receiver one here at VSiN, Mike Pritchard, joins the program on the Progressive Guest Line. Former NFL wideout, college football national champion at Colorado. Pritch, how much are you and your friends just talking about this week, man? I was born in the wrong generation with how much these wide receivers are getting paid right now.
I mean, Stormy, Michael, great to be with you. Yeah, you said it. I mean, wanting to be born in 1999 instead of 1969, right? But I'm okay. I think we're okay. You know, we have Google stock, we have Microsoft, we have McDonald's, so we're all right. But no, it's fantastic. No, I think what Justin Jefferson is doing, and what all these elite playmakers are doing, really, Christian McCaffrey and everybody, it's outstanding. I mean, I remember my days in the very beginning of all of this, right? When I got to the league, it was free agency was just becoming a thing with the Reggie White situation. And so to see what free agency or revenue sharing or expansion or certainly growth in revenue can do for you, it's incredible what's going on in the National Football League right now.
Mike, let me ask you something. When you go through it and you played the position, right? So you know that there's, you know, Tyreek Hill changes the game. Right. Jefferson changes the game. But there's just a lot of other guys are good, but the good guys are now making elite money. At what point do you say, wait a minute, that this isn't going to work? I mean, Jordan Addison is a first-round pick. Does he get paid? Does Drake London get paid, even though they really haven't tilted the field in their favor? The other guys do.
It's a great question, Michael, but I'm going to throw it back to you in this regard because, like I just mentioned earlier, we're seeing unprecedented growth in the National Football League. The stated goal by these owners is $25 billion annually. Right. And they're on the fast track of achieving that goal, too. So I looked at the salary cap. $255 million now. And so if you add in 7% growth in salary cap, like we've seen next year, the salary cap goes up to 273. And then in 2026, it's 292. By the time we get to 2030 and CBA is over, we're going to see a new CBA. The salary cap is going to be $383 million. How do you manage that as a club? How do you manage a salary cap upwards of almost $400 million? We're going to see so many astronomical contracts. It's going to blow our minds in the next few years.
I was about to say, if that was the salary cap last year, what would Daniel Jones have gotten paid, Michael?
Well, that's the thing, Stormy. You're going to pay for mediocrity. Yeah. That's what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, is Dak Prescott worth $60 million a year? No. And you have to take yourself and say, no, wait a minute. That's the market. He's not worth it, but the market says this is what he gets paid. And so you got to make decisions. And you only can pay certain positions. You can't pay everybody. So you have to cheat in some other areas, and that's really where it gets a little iffy, right? I mean, and I think to me, I was talking to a coach in the league, you know, who's an offensive coordinator. He's like, look, you know, we had three really good receivers where I was. We couldn't throw the ball because we didn't have a quarterback, and we couldn't protect.
Yeah.
You know, and so to me, it's still, football's a game that comes back to that. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to say, I mean, it's fascinating to just think about managing a salary cap of $400 million, one. But then two, what you said, you know, there's a handful of franchise quarterbacks. Like I think I can count up to about 12 franchise quarterbacks. And there's unique situations with Aaron Rodgers and Dak Prescott, I think, is in a unique situation. And certainly I'm not adding in the guys that are recently drafted. But in terms of quarterbacks that elevate players around them, in my estimation, there's only one. I mean, I don't know where Aaron Rodgers is going to be yet with that injury, but it's Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Josh Allen to an extent, but certain extent. But majority quarterbacks in the National Football League right now, they need a surrounding cast around them to elevate the quarterback play. So that justifies Justin Jefferson because they have a rookie quarterback, and, you know, Devontae Adams, because who knows who's going to be quarterback out here with the Raiders, and, you know, Brock Purdy getting elevated with all the weapons that he has. I mean, that is what the league has turned into right now.
And the Vikings, of course, in a unique situation where they are on the rookie deal for their quarterback. Right. And so they can afford to pay the big talent wide receiver who does make the quarterback better. With the 49ers and the deal they get done earlier today with Christian McCaffrey adding to what was already the most lucrative running back deal that we've seen in NFL history. Now, naturally, all the questions and the eyes turn back to Brandon Ayuk, who's not there for mandatory minicamp, who's trying to get a deal done. When you have guys like Justin Jefferson, who gets the big contract, CeeDee Lamb, who's expected to be next, Ja'Marr Chase, who's eligible for an extension as well. Where does Brandon Ayuk stack up in this mix to you? Because he's coming off of a career season, best that we've seen from him. He can be that deep field threat. But in some of the category and upper echelon that he wants to be in, where does he stack up with those other wideouts?
Well, I feel for him. I think he's an exceptional route runner. I don't know if he's a true number one elite playmaker like a Justin Jefferson, you know, like AJ Brown, all these guys, but he is a really, really good player, right? And so I feel for him because I know the family. The Shanahan family do not want to pay two wide receivers. They just don't.
Yeah.
And so that is what is the crux of the matter here with Brandon Ayuk. And, you know, they can exercise him and certainly they can kind of control him with the franchise tag and do all kinds of things. And really as a player, that's what frustrates you. I think if you're on a fast track of being elite, you have to get upstairs and knock on the door of Michael Lombardi prior to that fifth year option. If you were drafted in the first round, and try to get something done, because that's how you're going to escape the control of the franchise. And knowing that Shanahan family, knowing how they work, it's going to be difficult to see Brandon Ayuk get the money that he wants or feels like he deserves.
Yeah, the problem with this contract, Mike, is you have to, it's one of those you want to grow into. He wants to get paid elitely, which free agency would do it. We saw Christian Kirk get an elite contract a couple years ago without a lot of great numbers behind it. But you have to build a contract around, okay, here's where really your number says you should be, but if you continue to play like this, here's where your numbers will be. And it's hard to get players to take that kind of deal because they want it right now. Understandable. And they know if I get to free agency, somebody will pay me that number without a doubt. So that's a hard negotiation to go through. As you look, we had Simon Hunter on yesterday, and we talked about week one. And I know you're considered a professional when it comes to betting. Is there a game in the week one rotation that has just caught your eye that you think is going to be a perfect play?
You know, Michael, the only one I've focused in on so far, because we are so far away, is that Pittsburgh-Atlanta game. I think we talked about that before, right? If you're at Pittsburgh, you're catching, 2.5 points, I think, at the time. I haven't looked at the line recently, but, you know, so many things are going on. You know, Atlanta, are they really going to hit the ground running with Raheem Morris? With Kirk Cousins? I think continuity has to speak volumes. At least it does to me when it comes to betting and knowing how teams would love to have those fast starts and certainly don't have to iron out wrinkles or anything like that. So to me, there's a lot of wrinkles down there in Atlanta, right? Hot Atlanta right now. whereas Pittsburgh, I think they're recharged, right? And they have this quarterback and Russell Wilson that thinks that he's legendary, and then you got Justin Fields, I think, who's going to push him. But then you have a really, really talented roster with continuity. And when they're healthy on defense, they're as good as it gets out there. So I just think that's an opportunity if we're looking at Lions right now in early month of June.
How important is it at some point in your mind, if you're Justin Fields, to get on the field this season? I mean, both Russell Wilson and Fields are playing essentially for their careers and their next contracts, right? To see what they're going to be. But Fields being the younger player, how important is that for him?
You know, I like this, Stormy, because I think Russell is playing for legacy and Hall of Fame, right? I think Justin's trying to become that guy.
Yeah.
Every man for themselves. I think that's going to be an interesting watch right there to see how these guys coexist and certainly push each other. I think Justin's got a ways to go. But this is the kind of offense and certainly the philosophy that is conducive for his type of game. He's a Pop Warner quarterback, meaning he's the best athlete on the field with the ball in his hands. But as far as throwing it and winning from the pocket, I think Pittsburgh wants to rely on Russell in that regard. So I think they'll push each other. Ultimately, Russell will win it. But Justin should be better off for it just from the experience standpoint.
Rich, always always appreciate. I'm having such a hard time today speaking, and it's literally my job, Rich. Appreciate your insight. We'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate you as well. Thank you.
Mike Pritchard on the Lombardi Line. We will be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Now and save big. For a limited time here at VSiN, you can get our annual VSiN Pro subscription for $199. It's usually $240 a year. Now you can subscribe at this discounted price, and when you do so today, we're throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro for less than 50 cents a day. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets, real-time betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Don't miss out. This offer will not last long. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe and use our promo code Lombardi to claim your discount and bonus month. VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi.
All I love it. Here's my favorite segment of the week. I got Billy Joel playing Stormfront in the background. Beautiful. It's perfect. All right, I got some things we have to cover, Stormy. You always ask me questions I get to ask you in this segment. You cover a lot of colleges every week you're there. You see a lot of college coaches. You spend time around a lot of coaches. You see the rah-rah and the strategist type coaches. Tell me why you think that Dan Campbell, even though he's a rah-rah coach, is still effective.
Yeah, so my warning here, Michael, is like, I don't know if you know this, but the NFL has cheerleaders, right? Like, they have really cool outfits. They're very talented dancers. The NFL has fans. Players have tons of friends. I don't need my head coach to be a cheerleader, a fan, or a friend. Right. Like, I want my head coach to be a head coach. I want him to be a manager. I want him to be a CEO. And there are a couple coaches out there, Robert Saleh, Antonio Pierce, that I need to see if that flip is going to switch. Like, in a world of Nathaniel Hackett rah-rah coaches, be the Dan Campbell. Be the Dan Campbell who, yes, he's emotional. He's passionate. He is the biting kneecaps, drink a gallon of coffee type guy. But he is also somebody who has gotten so much buy-in and proven to be an effective head coach. Robert Saleh was hired a day before Dan Campbell. And what does he have to show for it? He has 18 wins. We have a continuation of the longest active playoff drought in major American professional sports right now. Yet the expectations are Super Bowl. And watching Hard Knocks last year, my big takeaway was you are a humongous fan of your quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. And the minute that the quarterback went down, everything fell apart. Everything crumbled because you put all of your eggs in this basket. If the Jets exceed expectations, they go over their 9.5 win total, they make the playoffs, give Aaron Rodgers coach of the year, not Robert Saleh. For Antonio Pierce, I love that he got players to say, yes, let's dig into this mentality of bringing the Raider way back, the Mahomes rules. We've got the recipe, right? That's all fun and games. But are you really a master motivator? And are you a manager, or are you somebody who, the former head coach wasn't very liked and he was on his way out and guys like me? I need to know. I'm not sure yet. So I would beware buying in on these coaches that have yet to prove to me they're more than a good speech.
Great advice. I agree completely. And look, if you're Mr. Raider, we know Jim Otto was Mr. Raider. I think somebody from the Raiders should have attended his funeral, which no one did, which was shocking to me, considering they talk about the Raider way so much. Mark Davis's airplane got canceled because of a pilot, his mom, and he couldn't go. But no one else attended Jim Otto's funeral from the Raider organization, which to me, if that's your mantra, I don't understand how Mr. Raider had no one there. All right, let's shift to the NHL. Your favorite subject. The Stanley Cup begins on Saturday. We've waited a long time. They give the guys in the hockey as much a break between series as they do between years. I mean, this has been remarkable. And there's a lot to like about Connor McDavid. But what is your concern about backing Edmonton?
Yeah, I've made it clear already. I like the Florida Panthers in this series. And I think a lot of casual bettors are going to look and say, I can get the Edmonton Oilers and the best player in the world at a plus money price. Lock it in. Let's go. And fair, valid point. If that is your perspective, then you should be betting Connor McDavid to win Conn Smythe because it's a better price and effectively the same bet. But when I look at this series, I think about it more from the goaltending perspective than I do the high-end talent. Stuart Skinner is coming off the best game of his career. He and the Oilers D were nails against the Stars, 1.95 goals against average in that series. But that was the best game of his career. And if you want to beat Florida, you have to be even better. Let us not forget, as Mike Somich mentioned, he got pulled the previous series. He lost his job not too long ago. And I feel bad saying this, but for Florida and the road that they have gone to get here, Stuart Skinner's probably goalie number 4 of 4 in terms of toughness that they have faced along the way. They opened up with Andre Vasilevsky. They have Jeremy Swayman in the Boston Bruins. They have the door himself in Igor Shesterkin in the New York Rangers. I think this series will likely be good evidence for people that just because you have the best player doesn't mean you have the best team. And like I said in the last segment, I give the Florida Panthers the edge in net, the edge in depth, the edge in health, the edge in balance, the edge in just about everything except special teams. So give me Florida, baby. That's all I'm saying. Beware of the Connor McDavid effect in this set.
I love it. But what I love most is those Russian names that just roll off your tongue in hockey so well. Like, I would have been stumbled on the Ranger goalie for like about an hour.
Sergei Bobrovsky, really kind of baby. Let's go. Let's go.
There you go. There you go. I mean, Bill Berman would have given me a look like, you can't even say that name. Anyway, all right, let's go back into my comfort zone and your comfort zone on every single weekend, because you've been traveling doing UFL games on ESPN. So what's your storm warning for bettors this weekend when they're betting the conference championship games?
I don't doubt the Birmingham Stallions. I found it very interesting how quickly we saw a line move this week in the conference final, where Birmingham opened a 6.5-point favorite, almost immediately went down to 5. Similarly, the Stallions have been a favorite to win the championship all year long. They've been odds on since week 7. We saw that peak at minus 165, but has steadily come down to minus 125. And I think a lot of this is scoreboard and box score watching less than it is actually watching and listening to the games. And it's spring football. I don't blame you. That's fine. Me, however, I'm coming at this from a very different perspective from the market, because I am watching and listening to all these games. Birmingham got out to such a far lead this season. They were 7-0 to start the year. They knew they were going to make the playoffs. They knew they were going to get home field in the playoffs. The last couple weeks, they've been skating by. They've been coasting. They have not been playing as hard. They haven't been utilizing their quarterback, Adrian Martinez, to his full potential. So, yeah, the scores have shown that. They had a close game with Houston. They lost their first game of the year. Last week, because they're playing the same opponent they're playing this week, it was an extremely vanilla game plan. They were not the better team on the field for the majority of the game, and they still won. Like, to me, this 5 is a gift on the Birmingham Stallions. That minus 125 to win the championship is a gift on the Birmingham Stallions right now. So I'm just warning people against the initial move, because people are betting these based on box scores and not on the reality of the situation, because they haven't been following it.
I love it. And is Adrian Martinez still playing at Nebraska? I'm confused. Is he still there? Because I felt like he was there for 40 years.
I covered him in Nebraska. I covered him at Kansas State, man. I just me and this kid go way back now.
I love it. All right. So let's stay with college football.
Yes.
You have a sleeper in the Southeast Conference, and I love it. And I just want to know, before you start, Eli Drinkwitz's team, Elliot didn't coax you into this. Is that correct?
So he did inspire this. So here's the thing. Every week I do these things called VSiN 60s here on the network. They air in other shows or in commercial breaks, and it's about futures markets, usually in football. And I did one on the SEC, and I didn't mention Missouri in it. And Elliot goes, come on, give Mizzou some love. So I said, you know what? I'll do my research. I'll give them their due diligence here. Right off the top, Brady Cook coming back, third year starter. They got one of the top wideouts in college football, Luther Burden. I'm like, okay, good, good. Lots of returning production on offense. Defense probably going to have a little regression, lost a handful of players in the draft, but still enough pieces to feel good about where you're at coming off an 11-2 season and a Cotton Bowl win over Ohio State. First real test isn't until week 5 at Texas A&M. And so, Michael, I'm looking at their schedule, and I had to do a double take. I had to do a triple take. This thing is so set up for them to potentially make an SEC title game. It's more about who they don't play in the conference than who they do. They avoid Georgia. They avoid Texas. They avoid Ole Miss. They avoid LSU, Tennessee. They have a realistic chance of being 7-0 when they roll into Tuscaloosa on October 26th, where, and I love Kalen DeBoer, this ain't your Nick Saban Alabama anymore. So two of their toughest road games at A&M and at Alabama, you're facing new head coaches. They win that game, they're 8-0, they're top 3 in the country. Final 4 games after that.
I love it.
OU at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, Arkansas at home. Extremely manageable. You know Georgia and Texas face each other. So at least one of them is going to have a loss. UGA also is at Alabama, at Ole Miss. They've got some tough games. So I was just looking at Missouri futures. Over 9.5 wins is plus 125, plus 175 to make the new expanded 12-team playoff. 15-1 in the AFC. If you're looking for some pizza money fun, put it on Mizzou. We got a sleeper on our hands.
I love that. I think it's great logic, and it was great exactly because, look, they have a talented team. He's done a good job recruiting. And, you know, with a quarterback and receiver, it can go a long, long way. And if they're improved on defense, real quick before we go and you lead us to break, you want to warn people about taking the Celtics.
Oh, we'll talk plenty more NBA Finals, Michael. I can get into that on the other side of the break. But-